Hello, this is Todd Satterston from 800 CEO Read, and today I have with me Lisa Haneberg. She is a very prolific author, and we're going to do something different today. We're going to talk about not just one book, but all of the books that she's written, and I promise it'll be interesting. Lisa, thanks for hanging out with me.
Thank you, Todd. It's a pleasure.
And for those of you who are listening, you might notice, gosh, the quality of this recording is so much better than what you normally do. It's we're actually in the offices of 800 CEO Read today. Lisa's in town, and we thought we'd sit down and chat with all these books she's done. Because the first book she wrote was High Impact Middle Management, Solutions for Today's Busy Managers, and it was written and came out. It's kind of how we first met and
That's
sort
right.
of crossed
yeah.
paths.
Mm-hmm.
Why does that book matter? Why should we care about being high impact in middle management?
Well, first of all, I believe that middle managers are the engines of the organization, and they have a terribly complex and difficult job. And I wrote the book because I couldn't find anything that really talked about how they can be great given those complexities. And so getting away from the victim mentality of, oh my gosh, I'm being pulled in a million directions, to more saying, no, but that's why I'm here. I'm here to make sense of all the stuff that happens in the middle of the organization. And so that's why I really wanted to write the book, was to not only help those folks that are in the middle, but also to empower and have them see their role in a totally different way.
And we were talking a little bit earlier, you were saying that, again, it was almost, there was a professional need as well in terms of the, I find a lot of authors end up writing books because the book that they want to use when they're talking to folks, or they're a coach or trainer, whatever the case might be, doesn't exist, and it ends up being kind of that impetus to going and writing the book.
Yeah, my job, my day job, if you would 15 years prior to writing the book, was to train and lead managers, and I was also a middle manager myself. And so I was looking for something that would help me help them, and I just simply didn't find it.
Yeah. So the next book after that is Organizational Development Basics, which came out later that year, September of 2005. It came out from ASTD Press. What's that about?
Well, it's really an extension to middle management. One of the key issues that gets in the way of managers doing a great job in helping make strategies a reality is that the organization isn't set up correctly, or it's not nimble enough to make changes and realign as, different decisions are made or strategies change. So this is a sort of a real people book about organization development. It's a counterculture from the standpoint it's not at all academic. It doesn't try to be exclusive from the standpoint of not speaking to all managers. So it's really about how do you help align your business and the part of the business that you run so that you and your people can be more successful.
The next book you wrote, and my gosh, how do you write this many books? Because I'm looking at how close these things are together. Because
right.
It's like, the organization development basis comes out September 05, and then March 06, coaching basis comes out from ASTD.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm basically writing all the time. Management Craft, my blog, it actually will have its fifth year anniversary this August. And so I'm writing all the time. So it'll fit into whatever book is coming up next, or it might be something that I'm writing today that will fit 5 years from now. But because it's all very thematic, it's all about how do you help people in business do what they need to do a little bit easier? How do you acknowledge the barriers and move out? And that's what Coaching Basics was about, is how do we help catalyze help and assistance and mentoring so that people can do their best work?
The question I've been asking people more and more is this idea of, in your world, does management and coaching, are those synonyms? Would we find, in your thesaurus, would we put those two words next to each other?
I think that coaching would be a subset of management, but I think it's a very big subset. So the key to management, great managers help people do their best work. Great coaches help people do their best work. So in that way, I would absolutely agree with you. I think I'd probably bolt on a couple other things that are typical of management. But if you had to say, if you could only do one thing as a manager, what would you do? It would be to help people do their best work.
So Focus Like a Laser Beam, 10 Ways to Do What Matters Most, Josie Bass. It comes out like 4 months later.
Yeah.
So focus. why is, again, there's this, you're starting to get this, certainly, that managers having difficult time, again, running the thematic course of your work so far. How does focus fit into all those other things?
Well, it's a little bit like, I know recently John Cotter came out with this great book called A Sense of Urgency, which is a drill down of earlier books he had done on the change process. And he picked The Sense of Urgency because he saw that that was the one area that people were having most difficulty with, or almost had more issues with failing. And the same thing is true with management and focus. And so what I found, what was getting in the way of a lot of the folks I was working with, I was training with, and I was coaching, is how do you make the right decisions about your time? How do you help you and your team focus on what matters most and what's getting in the way? And what's interesting with focus is I found that it's not your typical stuff of organization tactics and that other kind of stuff, but it has much more to do with the social context of work.
The next book is 2 weeks to a Breakthrough, How to Zoom Towards Your Goal in 14 Days or Less. Certainly the most famous part of this was the promotion of the book and the nationwide motorcycle tour. But so why this book next? Why are breakthroughs important? How does that fit into management, or doesn't it? And it's this other thing completely different.
No, it's totally related. And all through my career in helping managers excel and leaders excel, and then in writing these books, what I found was that it was often the tiniest of things that would help people leapfrog forward. And so I got really interested in, I mean, if we could do a few tiny things a day and have big things happen, we would all want that to happen. And what I was noticing as I was talking to people and I was working with them, and sometimes either me as a coach and a trainer or other people were helping other people, and that it was these tiny little things that they were doing that was making a huge difference. And so I really wanted to think about that and look at that and research that and then collect it together, because it's, and honestly, of the entire list, Todd, this is my favorite book because it's the one that has magic happen. I know that doesn't sound like a very businessy thing, but it can have magic happen in helping you build your business.
So talk about the motorcycle tour. Talk about, I mean, we can't sort of skip that part. Tell people what that was, how that fit into the promotion of the book, and you know, for the authors that, you know, those prospective authors listening, was it effective? Did it work? You know.
Well, for 2 weeks to Breakthrough, again, I thought it was a book that had a special message and a magical message, but it was one that really lent itself to a short talk. And so I could have a 5-minute, 10-minute, 15-minute conversation with someone, and they would totally get the concept, and they would be ready to go. And I happen to have a motorcycle, and I love riding it. And so this was one of those put two passions together kind of things. And I came up with the concept. I have to say my publisher was not necessarily all that. I was expecting them to go, wow, Lisa, this is a great idea. We're all for it, all this kind of stuff. They just thought it was kind of strange because I don't think too many people have done that before. But it was 40 days, 9,400 miles, 38 different talks that I did all around the country. It was an amazing experience for me. I know I catalyzed some breakthroughs, and I'll always cherish that. If I were to look at the ROI of the cost in terms of just from an, if there's other authors out there, you want to do it because you love to do it. This was not something that turned 2 weeks to a Breakthrough into a bestseller. But what I do know, it's like Rocky Horror Picture Show. I have a cult following with this book, and I get emails from those folks that I met and talked with from that. And that's 3 years later now. So it was a small but powerful effort.
The next book is 10 Steps to Be a Successful Manager.
Yeah, so this book was, ASTD Press asked me to write a book that helps managers if they're either newer to management or they've been managing for a while, but they want to tune up. And so it's a way to look at, if you can only look at one aspect of management now, look at, that would be step one, and then you go to step two and step three. So what it is it's a way to tune your managerial practice, and it also lends itself to being a really good training book. So those training professionals out there listening, it really lends itself because you can do an hour, half hour, 2 hour sessions on each step once a month and then have a year-long process. So it's sort of helping either if you're doing it self-directed as a manager, or sort of if I take a chapter a month to tune your managerial process. So I tried to put in, what do you want to think about first? What do you want to think about second? What do you want to think about third?
Developing Great Managers, 20 Power Hours, ASTD, a year later.
Yeah. Well, this book is really, I'll have to say, this is the nichiest book on the list because it is more particular to people who train or perhaps for middle managers who have to coach other managers. So it's really about how do you deliver informal learning conversations for managers in the organization. So the book actually includes 20 hours of informal learning for managers that someone could do. So it's somewhat like a facilitator's guide, but it walks you through how to enliven the informal learning that's occurring. You could even take half your staff meeting, pick a power hour, read it 10 minutes before, and you pretty much are good to go.
So you use this term informal learning a number of times. Define that. What does that mean? How should I think about that?
Well, recently at the ACD National Conference, Carrie Williard, who's the CLO for Sun Microsystems, said that 78% of all learning in organizations is informal. What that means is that people are learning by reading books, by having conversations, by having mentors, by going online, by playing YouTube videos, by even Twitter could be considered an informal learning. So it's something that is not a structured class that is designed for training. And if 78% of it's happening that way, we should really look at that a little bit more and be more active as professionals in how we make that 78% of the time spent as best as possible.
That's really interesting because that's really interesting. I think we're going to come back to that. The last book is the one you come up with most recently. It's called Hip and Sage.
That's right.
So I was looking at the book last night. Tell folks, what is Hip and Sage about? Who's the audience for the book?
Well, there's a couple different audiences, but I would say the main audience is people who are 40-something and better that are still in the workplace, or maybe they're an entrepreneur, but they're somehow wanting to work in business in some way or another. And they want to be very successful. They want to continue to be relevant. And they want to continue to be competitive. And so Hip and Sage is really about how to bring out our sageness, how to bring out all the wonderful things that we've learned over the years, but in a way that people who are younger than us can hear it in the way that we intend. And I really put the onus on us to make sure that we are adjusting and that we are learning. And I think it's our responsibility to figure out how to communicate today.
Because, yeah, there's a lot of stuff in there talking about, you know, the importance of, you know, keeping up. I mean, social media is just one example of that. I mean, what is it that you think then, you know, with sort of the premise of this book, what do you think happens to us older folks that we sort of, you know, lose touch and then that creates this sort of gap?
Well, I think even in the best of intentions, we get just very, very busy and we learn what works for us and we keep doing it again and again and again and again. And, you know, that's what we want to do is we want to keep doing what's working. But what we don't know is every time we add a new team member who perhaps is a 20-something or a 30-something or even from another culture, I think you could extend it to diversity in all ways, is that that person may not be hearing you in the way that you intend. And so we need to continue to challenge ourselves on how do I best communicate today? I think that, you know, it's not just about learning Web 2.0 technologies. That's not what being hip's about. It's how ought having four generations in the workplace change how the staff meeting looks? I want you to ask that question.
So what's the sage part? We've been talking about a lot of the hip part. What's the sage part of that equation then?
Well, the cool thing about getting older is that you're learning things. You're learning how to relax. You're learning what deserves attention and what you should just chill out about. And that is a golden skill. And the folks that are coming into the organization that are younger than you, that don't have as much experience, you can help accelerate their learning. And so I think the saging process is the process we go through to polish and to learn and to really get better at things. And we need to pass that on. We need to figure out how to not only appreciate it, because you are sage and you do have those learned skills, and to appreciate them. And we need to do it in a way that people will hear, which is not, in my day, we used to do this, this, and this. It's in a way that they're going to hear it and that brings it up in a fresh way.
So, you know, I'm thinking back through this list of books that we just talked about, and I'm trying to figure out if maybe in a chronological order of someone entering the workforce to CEO, I mean, what do you think the progression is for how someone might work through your bibliography of work that you would read? I mean, because it seems to me that, And I guess I have some thoughts, but I guess I'd ask you first. I mean, if I just entered the workforce and I'm into a job a year, you know, what sort of stuff that you've written do you think you would first direct people to?
10 Steps to Be a Successful Manager would be sort of the most entry level of the books that I have. Now, if you happen to be re-entering the workforce and you're a little bit more mature or experienced, perhaps you've been raising a family for several years, or you're just restarting and reconnecting, Hip and Sage, certainly anyone who's over 40, I would recommend Hip and Sage right away. The other thing, though, is 2 weeks to Breakthrough is really how to catalyze greatness at any time in your life. So I think 2 weeks to Breakthrough is one that would apply at any time. It's not necessary for any career. Middle management, of course, high impact middle management focuses on middle manager. The OD and the coaching books are really for people who need to help catalyze others and coach others. So it would be more helpful to those who have middle management or above responsibilities, have to coach other managers, have to develop other managers. Same thing with developing great managers. Those would be for people who are either in the training or HR area or have to coach and manage other managers.
What are you reading?
One of the things that I am just really fascinated about right now is this whole notion of how we deal with all of this complexity in the world. So, and how do we help professionals make sense of the nonstop barrage of this in a way that they take ownership of that? So I'll tell you that one of the books that is on my list right now is Twitterville. I have the galley of that. And you'd say, well, how does that relate to what you said? But it's this teeny tiny informal learning. It's another barrage of information. Twitter can be very overwhelming to people. And so I'm just interested in how do we bring knowledge of all these tools that are out there in a way that is manageable. So I want to learn more about that and learn more about Web 2.0 in terms of how that can make us better without making us have busier lives. I think technology can either make us crazy or make us better or both. And so I'm interested in understanding it so I can help people be less crazy, but more better.
You mentioned a book we were talking yesterday, Simplexity, which seems to fit in that. Tell people a little bit about that book and what it is you find interesting about it.
Yeah, and I think the correct pronunciation of the author's name is Kluger, right? Kluger, right? Yeah. Simplexity, which is, of course, a conjunction between the word simple and complexity. I did a podcast with that author, actually, and read the book. It was really great. And what it has us rethink what complexity is. And as managers, we need to know this. For example, one of the things that he says about that is one of the most complex jobs in our organizations is telemarketer or someone who has to do customer service because they have all these human interactions. So the notion of that human interactions increases complexity in the work is really important for managers to understand. And as the workforce becomes more virtual, imagine trying to figure out relationships when you never even get to meet these people or rarely get to meet these people. It makes, as managers, we need to understand and appreciate the complexity of the jobs. And so I think truly, if I were to write a high impact middle management 2, if you will, it would be all about how to simplify the world of work so that relationships can work better and prosper on behalf of business.
One of the questions I'm getting asked a lot, and you know, we'll sort of maybe end it on this, we'll see, is I'm getting lots of questions about how to manage, global teams, diversity teams.
Right.
And it's another one of those where there isn't a ton that's been written specifically on that topic, or at least that I've seen. I've been kind of even trying to search it out and be able to recommend things, but we're certainly dealing with more global teams. Whether it's I work for a corporation and I've got, you know, manufacturing in one country and product development in another and sales and marketing in all the individual territories, or I'm an entrepreneur and I'm now using global freelancers to develop. I mean, give me direction on how do I deal with the challenges of global teams. What do you think of when I say that?
Well, I think the number one skill we're going to need to deal with this as business leaders in any way is, well, really two, humbleness and curiosity. And humbleness means to not have assumptions about what's right or wrong and how people communicate or how they prefer to be communicated with. As we know from all the, you know, the working across borders classes many of us had in our organizations, you do need to embrace and learn about what are the idiosyncrasies of each individual, corporation, geographical area, and not only that, but niches within that. So I think that online there's tons of information that would help us understand each other a little bit better. But the key thing is to have the humble approach to begin with, so that if we have some folks, whether it be contractors or employees or team members or whatever, the first thing we do is say, we ask the question, how is it that we ought to be working together? How is it that we ought to be communicating with? How do you prefer to receive information? And do you prefer a direct approach or indirect approach? And I'm asking this question because I want to better understand you, and I want to better communicate with you so that you hear my intent, which is to be a great partner. So if you communicate first, my goal is to be a great partner, and you can help me by communicating how that'll work for you. I think humbleness go a long way. As we know, the information will be there. You're right. There's not a lot of great books right now, but you know they're in the pipeline. And the question is, what are you going to do with that great book? Are you going to hear it in a way that you become mechanical? Are we going to be the American cowboys and cowgirls and just sort of roughshod into the world? Or are we going to hear this in a humble way that says, okay, I'm the one that needs to be a great partner. What can you tell me that would be helpful?
So today we've been talking with Lisa Hainenberg, prolific author, a ton of books. Digitally, where do we find you?
Digitally, you can find me lisahainenberg.com, managementcraft.com, hipandsage.com, but just start with my name.
Okay. It's been great talking to you. It's been great. I do this so rarely, like in person. So yeah. It's been awesome. So thanks for hanging out with us.
Thank you, Todd.